It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. You know what that means? It's time for Here and Now with Rachel C. Joining me in the studio tonight, the one and only Eileen Dover. Thanks for being here. We're going to kick things off tonight with a little something, something from Fruit and Flowers. This is Run, Run, Run.
Sorry, man, if I see you again. You better run, run, baby, fast as you can. You better run, run, baby, fast as you can. Cause you're gonna be a sorry man if I see you again. 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 If I see you again.
Everybody, you're listening to Here and Now with Rachel C, the show that celebrates live performance culture and activism on the arts. So on that note, squeaky mic there, let me tell you about things to go out and see and do, because I want you to go out and like see and do the things. The Levitation Festival is happening, listeners in Austin or in that area. Always a big, good, fun time happening all over the downtown Austin area. It kicks off tonight, I believe. Go and check it out. I hear Alex Moss has like, he's performing all that solo material, which he kind of wrangled a lot of his Black Angels bandmates into recording with him. So it's kind of like a Black Angels redux, basically. That's the material. I've liked the little I've heard so far. Also happening, I believe this is tomorrow night, Women That Rock, our friend at the show, our former guest, Andy Arenal, the brain behind the Women That Rock platform. They've got a show going on. That's tomorrow at the Better Shop, 155 Grand Street in Brooklyn, from 7 to 10 p.m. Olivia Reed, Ransom Pierre, Hava, and Tenderheart Bitches. They are on the lineup. She always happens to book the best, the bands with the best names. They're great bands, but Women That Rock always has great bands with great names. Space is limited for this event, by the way, so you want to go get those tickets now. All right, this weekend also, the Gotham Storytelling Festival is happening. Go and check that out. That's Saturday and Sunday at the Crane Theater on East 4th Street. Yes, a theater still exists in the East Village. Yay! Also, Tuesday, the 12th at Mercury Lounge, JJ Wilde, Morgan Keller, and Love Honey. Go and check that out. Another thing I got to tell you about real fast. You know it. You know all about it, guys. We are a 501c3. It's getting to be that time of year. Get your write-offs in, guys, for the end of the year. Flirt with that donate button. Support the small batch, artisanal, farm-to-table, free-form radio that we are. And if you can't, you don't want to do it that way, or you can't, get us looped in with the Amazon Smile. I know you're doing Amazon Prime. You can find us on Smile. You can support us that way. You can buy some merch. You know that mug that belonged to your roommate that you broke? Go on RadioFreeBrooklyn.org. Go to our merch shop and buy a new mug. You replaced it. You settled up with your roommate. You supported us. Stuff like that. It works. Anyway, my guest tonight, the one and only Eileen Dover. Thank you for being here.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? So
lovely. I like that I don't have to wear anything fancy because it's radio.
You look great for radio.
You look great too.
We're both like dragged down. We're like,
yeah, but you have rose colored glasses on, like literally rose colored glasses. So like I could be like a leper sitting in front of you right now.
Everything looks great through these. It's the point. No, they filter the fluorescent lighting so I don't get a headache in here. Really, really helpful. So, Eileen, you we're kind of this focus of the show. The show is sort of focusing on, since we're live performance culture show, on drag a little bit, and sort of we're kind of coming out of that realm. Drag has kind of been with us forever, as long as we've had theater. When we think about it, the idea kind of originated. I did my homework a little bit on this one. Technically, the origins of drag go back to theater, back when women were not allowed to perform and men had to play the roles of women. And I believe the term drag referred to the dragging of certain costumes on the ground.
I think it was dressed as a girl.
Dressed as a girl. So you see, like, there's all this. So do my obligatory little backstory back here. Eileen, you kind of developed as a character out of the drag scene in the 90s, or you developed a character, Eileen Dover.
So the character...
Tell us about how Eileen Dover developed here.
Okay, Eileen Dover was, is like, not really, I consider myself an artist. I'm not a drag queen really anymore. I mean, back then, it was the early 90s, and there was no way to get on, like, there was no online, there was apps, there was no way to, and I thought, I'm the only gay person in the whole wide world. Well, that was clearly not true.
Right.
So these queens that used to hang around the area where I went to school, where I went to high school, they taught me, like, if you wear makeup and bring a fake ID, you can get into the bars and clubs.
Okay.
So I started putting on really ratchet makeup and the McDonald's bathroom and the combat zone and sneaking out of the house. My poor parents, they're going to be sainted. And just sneaking into the bars and clubs to be around people like me. And then I would actually wash off the makeup once I was in the door.
So for you, this was just a way to kind of sneak into a place that you weren't technically old enough to be in.
At the beginning, yeah. At the beginning. And then what ended up happening was... the queens were, when I was inside, there were times that I couldn't take the makeup off because it was like, the security was tight or whatever.
Gotcha.
The other queens would read me and they'd be like, you look horrible. they would like really read me for filth. And so I had to like get good at it. And there were no YouTube tutorials. So this was like very much like your mom's Cosmopolitan magazine.
Right.
Madonna was a big influence. So I would stick up a bunch of pictures of her and just sit there and practice and practice.
Right. Well, I, you, right away you touched on something important. Like, you're a performer and drag was just like one medium. And I think that's important. Like, drag is just, it's one medium of performance. It's one type of performance, you know, that it and I think that's important to point out, because if everyone has ever been to a drag show, what you're seeing isn't just the look of real drag. You're not just seeing a look. You're seeing a lot going on. There's dance. There's the music. There's the
it depends
the
on
it depends
it,
on the
yeah. It depends on the queen, yeah, and what kind of talent they have.
There's
you
humor.
Know?
There's a lot. Hopefully, there's a lot well-rounded performance going on.
And I think it's evolved. Like, you know, we just talked about Shakespearean times, yeah, when they were doing it, right, like, you know, because women weren't allowed, and then, you know, me stumbling in, yeah, and trying to like just get in, and like, you know, and I eventually the story ends, I got good at it and they started paying me to show up at clubs. So that was kind of funky. And then I ended up working with a lot of like really famous people and all kinds of stuff, and trouble ensued later on. But I think drag has evolved to in several ways, some good, some bad. I think drag is for everybody. I mean, a male, a female, a trans, anybody who wants to get dressed up, be outrageous, and turn it out. Come on down.
Yeah. So right away, we're kind of dispelling like this trope of like only certain people can do drag, or drag is just for, like, anybody can do this. You're just throwing one thing right out the window, right off the bat, which I love.
But I don't agree with that. I just, like, I used to, there was a queen that we used to work with that I used to work with in Boston, and, you know, no names or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to have backup dancers in this particular show. And they were like, no, it's a drag show, and that backup dancer is a real woman. And I'm like, a real woman? Well, what do you mean a real woman? What difference does it make? Like, she's in drag. And she's like, but she can't be in drag because she's female. And I'm like, well, that's a little narrow. Of course she's got three wigs on and 12 inch heels. She's in drag, as far as I'm concerned.
In the drag show. You're listening here now with Rachel C on Radio Free Brooklyn. So yeah, you're like, that's interesting too. So you, because you started the hour by saying you got into this because you're trying to get access to certain clubs because you want to be around people like yourself.
I just wanted to be around gay people, LGBT people. And
right. So you were kind of looking for it, for you is like access to a sense of community. So it starts there, and then like fast forward a little bit, it seems like there's some fracturing within community there.
So there's a few things I didn't understand. There's a few pieces. There was no rule book, you know, and I don't think there's a rule book for life for anybody, straight, gay, trans, binary, non-binary, fluid, whatever the case may be. There's no rule book. So it started as a vehicle. Then I started getting paid to show up.
Right.
Then I became known as Eileen Dover. And then like everybody in the city of Boston knew me as Eileen Dover. Uh-huh. So everybody wanted to be around me, but nobody wanted to date me. No gay man wanted to date me. And I didn't identify as trans, so I couldn't date, like, you know, you know, guys who wanted a woman. But, you know, and I couldn't date. I didn't realize that was going to be a part of the, you know, cross. But there were a lot of things that came along with it that were, you know, and back then, you know, we were more less concerned about, like, looking like the queens on RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. And, well, there was no RuPaul's Drag Race.
There was, well, not that RuPaul wasn't around, but this is probably kind of a little pre-RuPaul.
It was just around when she released Supermodel, which is, I think, the best thing that she ever did. Everything after that has been sort of, you know, up for grabs. But, you know, there were no death drops. There were no this. Everybody had their own thing. Everybody had their own person. Now it's very homogenized. There's like a uniform, that like leotard with the jacket type thing, and the anime eyebrows with the lace front wig. It's just, it all looks the same.
Super contoured
within an inch of your life. It all, you know, it, like when the queens go on the show, right, RuPaul's Drag Race, which I don't really watch, but I watched a couple of seasons, and they go on the show looking like themselves, and they come off the show looking just a little bit like Rue. And, you know, she's got her career. You know, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be. I hear what you're saying. There seems to be, like, basically a homogenization of the appearance, but then that can be kind of a homogenization of the culture, too. Kind of,
well,
goes with that.
Yeah, it's like sort of an unintended consequence of it becoming, you know, an underground art form that moved above ground. And, you know, as soon as you can value something with finances and put a price tag on something, and corporations get involved and money can be made, you know, then there's the uniform and there's a way that it has to look, and everybody has to do the death drop, and everybody has to do this, and everybody, and you know, and it just, I think, honestly, no shade, no tea, it kind of ruined it.
So what kind of things, let's talk about what was different or more fun that you did, like, happened before Drag Race that you don't see anymore? What would be a fun thing? Like, you know, pre everybody did the death drop, pre everybody contoured within an inch of their life. Like, what sort of things, like, would you have done in a performance, or what would you have seen in a really fun performance that you just don't see now? Like, what's really wacky, crazy shit?
With just walking out the front door.
Right.
I mean, people would just gag when you walk down the street. You know what I mean? People would just, like, that was in and of itself a performance, you know? Right. And it was, you know, you'd have to take the heckling, and you'd have to deal with, the, you know, things being thrown at you.
A little bit of a risk, too, walking out the front door.
Every night that we went out, we were taking our lives in our hands at that time. But, you know, we took a lot of cabs. We would have somebody hail that wasn't in drag, like, hail the cab for us, and then we'd all stuff ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And they called us sir. And, like, it cracks me up how politically correct everything is now, because, like, we just didn't think, we would just, like, in triage, like, we were like, all right, let me get two in front, but we took having fun very seriously.
It was like very prioritized,
but there were things like flying off of ropes, you know, coming out of the ceiling of the club, that it's all liability now. So like, you can't do those things.
Right. Well, like, at least in New York, New York hyper regulates everything you do.
And there was no regulation back then.
Yeah. Like, just across the board, not just in terms of performance spaces, but like, yeah. So that's just New York now. But yeah, you could just do so much more in New York.
I mean, I've seen fire on stage. Mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, I mean, it's not my thing, but I've seen bodily functions on stage. Yeah. I've seen pretty much everything done on stage that you can imagine. And this was all before, you know, I think before Giuliani cleaned up. Or, I mean, I don't think he cleaned up the city. I think he
pushed it off to the sides in different places. And
yeah, or suppressed and oppressed some, you know.
Right, buried a lot of things.
Buried a lot of stuff, yeah.
buried things a lot.
Buried fun.
Listen here now with Rachel C. on Radio Free Brooklyn. My guest tonight is Eileen Dover. We're having fun. Speaking of wild, unregulated things. Little surprise visit in the studio. Hi, Tom. Hi, Rob.
It's too late. I'm disturbed. I've been disturbed since I was born. Completely, completely and totally disturbed.
Well, that guy, they both like used to actually have some of those spaces where you could get away with some of those bodily fluids on stage and stuff. They were proprietors of spaces.
Amazing.
In the 80s and
yeah.
90s. So you may have encountered these guys before.
Let me make it clear that I was not a bodily fluid person.
Not a bodily fluid. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Great segue. So what would have Eileen have done on stage?
I was vile in other ways, like with language, with verbiage. My character was sort of the, I even still acting today, like whether I'm cast at male or female role or drag role or whatever, I seem to get cast as the bitchy, you know, like sister or the bitchy gay guy or the, you know, sarcastic best friend. So that was my kind of thing. I was like a host, more of an MC comedian type. I did the lip sync thing a little bit, but I was more of a character. So I would host things like, you know, amateur go-go night, you know what I mean? And that was very unregulated, and I'm not even going to go there
amateur
and tell you. Yeah. And what I mean by go-go is like amateur strip night.
Right.
You know, like, so it was like crazy.
Real quick. So, like, you know, things weren't left like limited for you there. You went on to work with a lot of different artists you didn't just stay in the clubs there. You went on, because we've talked about this like before the show. You went on and worked with a lot of different artists. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, kind of how like this, you went from like, hey, let me get into a club and be around some other gay people like myself, to kind of, I don't want to say very quickly, but that launched you into like this whole other scene. And obviously as a performer, like opened some doors for you because you made some connections, started working with other artists then.
Definitely. And it, the I don't know, it was in the clubs, but the clubs in the 1990s were right. So tapped into, like, I mean, celebrities went to clubs. So you, yes. You know, like I met, like I hosted Eartha Kitt's party in Provincetown, you know, you know, like. And drag also was a novelty back then. Mm-hmm. There weren't like, everybody now is doing it. Back right. then, there were a handful of us, so like you get.
So you guess a kind of a specialized art form, if you will, or performance sort of thing.
It was, yeah, it was just an emerging. Yeah, Cyndi Lauper loved to have drag queens, right. So when she went to the club that I was, we backup danced and backup sang right. for her.
Did you do you find that because it was and rightfully so considered like a specialized sort of it was a specialized sort of performer that did a drag thing. Whereas now more, not that it's a bad thing that more and more people are doing it, but maybe it's now that's like there's more saturation, there's more of a homogenization of things. Did you find that one could more easily like make some money at it back then versus now? Did
absolutely, you, like, okay. Absolutely. Because right now you have, you know, that queen who just wants attention and right. she'll do it. She'll show up for free or for $40, uh-huh. you know, and we used to make, you know, $500 to show up at the club, you know, just to show up and have fun.
Of course, you had some risk there. Like you had to take that cab. You had to, you know, because there were like, as you mentioned, some serious safety issues. So you have some.
Well, I worked the door yeah. and I worked yeah. the door at a club called Avalon across the uh-huh. street from Fenway Park. And imagine a Red Sox game letting out yeah. and me, you yeah. know, 7 feet tall with the big Afro wig, you know, standing at the door. You know, of the club, they had to pull me in some nights because yeah. there was too much stuff being thrown. I ended up having to go to court to testify because one of the bouncers got hit by a stanchion.
Oh, jeez.
And the summons, the court summons read my first real name, Dover, uh-huh. as my last name, which is not my last name, which right. was really hilarious. And the guy got off. He got off because he said that he was frightened because he figured out that I was a guy and went nuts and had swung the stanchion. And that's how he got away with like assault.
That's like awful. I mean, it's terrible, but
something you wouldn't think like, of now.
Yeah.
You know,
it seems like something you'd make up like as a bad joke now, but that was a very real thing.
You know, the other real thing was we did do a lot of free shows, and the free shows were all for AIDS. All of our friends right. were dying of AIDS.
Which leads to another important point, you know, kind of a then versus now thing. And I think we were talking about this before the show, too. It's the sort of thing where it's like, I think we need to talk about this because it really wasn't that long ago. How serious a problem AIDS was. AIDS is still here, by the way. We have not eradicated it.
No, there's
we
no have, cure.
There's no cure. We can catch it earlier. People can live longer, healthier lives with it. But I think let's talk about what a huge deal this was and just how it impacted all communities, but especially like the queer community. And just, I think people need to be reminded about that.
Well, I mean, I was really young, and I was young for everything that I, uh-huh. like I started, you know, sneaking out and trying to get involved in the LGBT community at 14, you know, so it was 1990, mm-hmm. and right in the middle before 6 years prior to the meds coming out mm-hmm. that are now helping people, thank God, live yeah. really long and healthy, happy lives. But, you know, we did a lot of benefit shows. We lost a lot of people. And it was just, I don't know if the magnitude of what AIDS was could be verbalized. I really don't know if, you know, I put 62 friends, I think, before I was 21.
Yeah, it's the because I think we're probably about the same age because I was that age at that time. But it's like, you know, you within a year, you like just people would disappear. Like you wouldn't. You,
every
you
week hear, at the club, someone yeah, was missing.
Or like you would. There was a time like throughout the '90s where if you didn't hear from somebody for a while, you kind of they may have died, and that would be the cause. Or like back then, someone wouldn't be feeling. There was no living with it. That you know, someone wouldn't be feeling right for a little while. They'd find they were diagnosed, not usually HIV positive, but like with AIDS, and they were. That was it.
Well, there
like
were a
months,
lot of my friends that were diagnosed and they were given AZT.
Right.
And AZT was basically like, oh, well, it's like Drano. You know, it just like killed everything.
The other thing,
them.
You know, you might have been treated, but the treatments were so harsh that, you know, the idea of like, you know, living with something, there wasn't much of a life that you had.
Well, the treatments were, they had the buddy program, and I lied about my age and tried to be a buddy, but they figured me out.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad that they did because it's really intense. It was basically going and being by somebody's bedside and, you know, making their lunches and going grocery shopping for them. And I think that, like, as much as I thought at 14 that I could handle everything, there's so much that I look back on that I experienced that I realized really still there's still scars, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it just eases into things, especially, but back then the people who taught me how to be a gay man or how to be a queen in this world are all gone, you know? So I feel like I'm sort of displaced in time.
Oh my goodness. That's very heavy.
Yeah. It's kind of, yeah.
Maybe we should take a little music break.
Absolutely. Play something cheery because...
Okay. Pick us. We had Cindy songs and you liked one. Which did we, oh. we had All Through the Night. We had Changes. Money Changes Everything.
You know what? We should play Money Changes Everything because, like, you know, maybe we could get some money back to the legendary queens here.
Yes, let's do that. Eileen Dover has chosen Money Changes Everything. We'll be right back here now with Rachel C.
I'm
We're back. Hey, real quickly, you know it's fire? Clean water. After more of a year than dreaming, researching, experimenting, late night conference calls, and early Saturday morning meetings, the Me team is happy and proud to present to you the Me bottle. The double insulated reusable stainless steel bottle disinfects water in a 60-second cycle utilizing UVC LED technology and is 99.99% effective against the dreaded E. coli. The single charge via USB lasts up to 30 days, and the bright LED display lets you know when the water is ready to drink. Join us in bringing clean water to all. Raise your bottle and drink to you and me. Find out more at mebottle.com. Basically, it's the best water bottle you could buy ever, people. Check it out. Also, check out our apps, radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android and /iPhone. They sound really great, not just saying that. I'm here in the studio with Eileen Dover. We were just talking a little bit about, like, the 90s, when Eileen came into being, the character of Eileen came into being, and we were talking about the AIDS crisis a little bit, and how that really affected, well, all communities, but especially gay community, and therefore, you know, the drag community that you and the performance art community you were a part of. A lot of the progress that came with treatment of the disease and services for people with disease came, I feel, out of action, like from within the community. And I think people really had to pull together.
It was kind of an amazing thing to see, because straight people, gay people, trans people, black people, white people, everyone from every background, from every lesbian and gay men traditionally didn't hang out, and right. Lesbians were taking care of gay men in their final day. It was just like everybody. It's the only thing that I can say that came out of that was good was the unity.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredibly painful, but the community was so unified.
Right.
And it was a really beautiful thing.
So is that unity still there, you think? I mean, I think, you know, obviously some progress has been made, and so there's a bit of an energy drain that happens with that, and people can kind of level out a little bit. But where is the community at now with unity? I know there can be within the performance community, and sometimes I've been told from performers I know within, like, the drag or the queer community, there can be some factioning going on, a lot of it coming from labels, like who kind of falls under what umbrella. Is there some unity or disunity in the community, and how important is it now given the current political and social climate, do you think?
I think it's incredibly important because of the political and social climate. All those labels are bullshit. You know, uh-huh. Back in the 90s, I mean, I hate to be that finger waver that says, yeah, back in my day, you know, like that, but it was just, you know, he was John, she was whatever, like it or they or whatever, it whatever pronoun you wanted. It's like, just say it and we'll respect it, we'll honor it. But I feel like the community as a whole is, we're LGBTQIAMNOP, and it just keeps going on and on, and it's very divisive. Mm-hmm. You know, we really need to pull together, because the right wing is more sadistic than they have ever been. Mm. The, like, level of, like, homophobia and racism and transphobia and all that stuff is, like, it's not hidden like it was, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, they're not scared anymore.
Yeah, they're, like, standing out in broad daylight, you know, hating. And mm-hmm. that's just, it's in a way good that, like, now we can see them, so we can see the enemy. We yeah. know who the enemy is, because it's always good. Yeah. But within the community, we need to stop policing each other's language. My friend Penny Arcade, who performs in a show that I host monthly, she has coined a couple of phrases. One is cultural amnesia, mm-hmm. like the new community. I don't blame the younger gay LGBT people for not wanting to remember AIDS because they weren't here for it. Mm-hmm. They didn't. It was so bad that I don't blame them for not wanting to. But homage and respect has to be paid for what was paid for them. I don't blame people that are my age and older that don't want to go back there and remember that period in time.
It's traumatic. I mean,
but like we have to look back and like, you know, you learn from history. Some things that worked. Why do we have the medications that we have today? Because people said yes and people bonded together. And unlikely people bonded together. Mm-hmm. And they weren't policing each other's language and getting all caught up in semantics. And, you know, all those people who say, oh, I'm politically correct. I'm so sensitive. They're not sensitive. They're bullies. They're absolute bullies. You will think how I think, or I will defriend you from Facebook and I will block you and I will cut you off and da-da-da-da. Right. That's a bully to me. Uh-huh. And that's what I used to run away from on the playground. I don't need it within the community.
Right.
So, like, everybody be yourself. Everybody respect everybody's choices to how they identify, you know, how, you know, we've got a lot of new words to identify things like fluidity. Mm-hmm. A lot of my friends are fluid mm-hmm. with their gender and their sexuality. It's a great word. It's awesome, you know, that there's a way to describe that now. But let's not get hung up on it. Let's just stick together, you know?
Yeah. Like I found that sometimes asking people what their pronoun is makes them feel comfortable. Like they actually kind of go, oh. And I'm like, if I make you feel that much more okay and not tense or anxious just by asking you that simple question, I think that's a big deal to you. I'm fine with that, but I don't feel like that's unnecessarily obsessing over a word. I've noticed the whole like it's so I you know when I was younger the word queer was a little bit derogatory and
it was
now
the worst.
It was the worst, but now I've used it a few times this hour and I've kind of using that because I feel like the younger generation is kind of using it as an umbrella. It's coming from within the community as an umbrella term because like it kind of to refer to the whole ball of wax, if you will,
right?
Because there are so many.
There are so many that we can't keep track.
And
so,
and I don't know how. I don't know if it's. And I kind of. I kind of feel like if there is just a you kind of need like hey, not the straight vanilla person, cisgendered person. Like that's the word. And I don't know if there is a little bit of a hey, we're taking the word backness to it. But it used to be, and that would have been a word I never would have touched. That's like a derogatory thing, but it seems like now it's kind of like, hey, we need something that is like, you know, it's.
I grew up in Boston. I hated that word because it was like with a Boston accent. It sounded even worse. Queer, you fucking queer. Oh, it was so, I hated it. And you know what? I know that our generation now, where we are right now, that word has been taken back. And I fought with I struggled internally. Uh-huh. I didn't like say anything about it. Like I was every time I would go to like a community meeting or to a thing and people would say the queer community. It was like, you know, nails in my ears. And now I'm just like, you know what? Whatever. It doesn't make any difference. You know, it's a great umbrella term. Whatever. Yeah. We've got bigger fish to fry. We've got an orange menace.
Yeah.
Destroying our country right now.
Like, stop the infighting and kind of come together because, really scary orange menace.
Exactly.
Friend to no one,
including like the people that are directly around
his base.
Yeah.
Air quoting here, the base.
The base that gets one by one fired, you know.
Yeah. He's not your friend either, people.
Yeah.
Like, if
you think the less woke sounding LGBT elder sitting next to you is your enemy, think again.
Yeah.
We have real enemies out there. Let's not fight within our own community.
Exactly.
And the thing that really has shocked me is these times that we live in that has come to the surface is there's a lot of racism inside the gay community, the LGBT community, and that's got to go. You know, we've really got to like, again, come together. You know what I mean? I just can't emphasize coming together enough. You know, it's really important. And it's also like I talked about like I earlier before we started the show, I would love to take everyone from the millennial or the Gen Z generation and pluck them into 1991 for just a week so that they could understand what sacrifices were made and what it took to get us to where we are now. But right. I also want to bring myself up to date and plop myself into 2019 because I can get a little rusty and stuck in my ways and like, you know, become that finger wagging.
Yeah.
You know.
And that, and also not just like in terms of the finger, like my, you know, get off my lawn kids kind of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of brings us back to the art a little bit too. Cause how do you feel like what, where's in terms of your performance, what are you doing now and where's that going? And where do you, I know we've talked about like what is kind of the, that where, drag as a medium kind of went in maybe not such a good way in terms of it went so mainstream that it kind of homogenized a little bit. But is there anything happening? Where else did it go? Or is it, did it just go in that direction? Or what are we seeing now that you do like? Or well, where what's happening now? Like where are those sort of sparks and stuff that, you know, kind of where's the inspiration like now within that medium?
Well, there's some really legendary queens that survived the homogenization of drag, like Lady Bunny.
Yes.
we love Lady Bunny. Linda Simpson, Sherry Vine, Jackie Beat. I'm sure I'm going to get yelled at for not mentioning someone, but that's like just a short list of people that I can think of right now that have myself, no, that have survived the crash of like, you know, drag becoming so homogenized. But everybody's act has, like, some have become DJs, some have become, I'm writing a book based on all of what we've talked about and then some.
Right.
And I host it was a monthly, but it's now, I think, going to be a quarterly event on the Lower East Side called Reading for Filth. And it's Hattie Hathaway's Reading for Filth because Hattie Hathaway was the one who originated the night.
Right.
And it gives a space for authors, writers, playwrights, comedians, musicians, anyone to get up for 10 or 15 minutes and tell your story, play your music, do a scene from your play, you know? And it was a genius thing that Hattie Hathaway, before Hattie passed away in January, Hattie started it in the 80s, I believe. And one of the things, I spoke at his memorial and I said, you know, I promise you, Hattie, that I'm going to keep something going that we did together. And that's what I do. I co-produce it with my friend Wendy Stewart Kaplan, who has a book out called She's the Last Model Standing. And she can tell you about the Studio 54 days and like really go there with you, like and tell you the transformation, you know, probably twice as much as I have. You know.
So this is, I love it because like I kind of got my foot in the door back in like the late 90s, early 2000s on a lot of these small black box theaters on the Lower East Side doing these open mics where you could go up and just kind of try anything. And I tried and I saw other, we talk about what you could see on a stage and I love it. I love you get like 10 to 15 minutes. Wow, that was unheard of. It used to be like you got 6 minutes and a light. You
know, exactly.
But it was great because it's like you could try anything, but then you saw what you watched other people try anything and that would inform what you did the next week or the next month. And it was like amazing stuff. And like that was just the most nourishing thing. Like even, and I saw people who, and I was a performer and an artist, but like there were people who kind of had, they were there just to like kind of read the thing they wrote, but it kind of nourished, it was nourishing to them, even though they didn't really identify as artists necessarily. They're just like, I wrote a thing and I just want to read it, and where I just want to get up and I have something to get off my chest kind of thing, tell your story. And it was just the most like nourishing kind of thing. And, but it fostered and developed and facilitated community, which was the really important part.
The roster at Reading for Filth is like so diverse, I can't even tell you. Like it's people from every, and it's some, in my opinion, everybody's an artist. Everybody has that inside of them. Everybody has something to, and everybody's a brilliant artist. It just, you know, sort of depends on who does it the most, the most frequently and gets, you know, gets seen. But, you know, our last show, we had the legendary Penny Arcade. We had Michael Musto. We had, you know, he's an icon here in New York.
Of course.
We had a fabulous woman named Fallon. We had my friend Ernest Garcia. Hey, Ernest. Hey, Chad. Hey, y'all. We had, yeah, it just said Joyce Miller.
Okay, this is an impressive lineup already.
Like, yeah, I know. I'm selling the show a little bit. But.
Sell. Go ahead, sell.
Yeah, really. No. Joyce Miller, who's like this really, she's her, check her out on Of Hubbard on Instagram. Mm-hmm. She was raised Scientologist. So she's like doing a whole play and like raised Scientologist. I mean, what a perspective to come from. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's never boring.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, anybody, if you, after you hear this radio show, contact me at the Eileen Dover, mm-hmm. or my email address is on www.eileendover.net, and you can contact me and I will happily book you for reading for Phil.
EileenDover.net. Check it out. Also, someone listening, the Reading for Filth needs a home.
So Bedlam is where our home is.
Okay,
Bedlam
great.
Is on Avenue C. It's a Daniel Nardiccio who also did Club Cumming with Alan Cumming.
Oh, good.
He's kind enough to give us that space.
So you do have the space. Okay, because when we last spoke, it was kind of...
date that I didn't have.
It's a date
was never an issue. It was the date that I didn't have.
But so you've got the date.
The next date is going to be January 24th, Friday, January 24th, Reading for Filth, Bedlam, Avenue C, on the Lower East Side in Manhattan. And myself and Wendy Stewart Kaplan will be producing the event. It also happens to be Wendy's birthday.
Oh,
this last one was my birthday.
Okay.
And this one's going to be
like
Wendy's.
Bunch of birthday shows. And I apologize. I mixed up that information, the dates and the times, but it's just a bunch of birthday shows then too.
Yeah. We celebrate like birthdays. If you know, just had like, you know, an ingrown hair removed and you're excited about it, we'll celebrate that.
This is performance art on the Lower East Side. You make a holiday out of damn near anything. It's like in New Orleans. They have a parade for anything.
Yeah.
You make a holiday out of anything. You know?
If you blew your nose and you feel less congested, you want to celebrate that, come on in.
It's January 24th.
Yeah,
that's why. This is like, why not? So I leaned over, performed with everyone, did all sorts of things. What sort of things is, you know, Eileen up to? Like as an artist, like what sort of performances are you doing now? I know production and the writing must take up a whole lot of your kind of creative space, if you will, mentally. What sort of things?
Production and the writing takes a lot of space. Plus I have to have a grown, you know, back in the day, this is another thing that's changed about New York. And, you know, this is where I feel a soft spot for the younger kids that are coming. Everything is so expensive.
Yes.
And back in the day, you could just be an artist in New York, in Boston, which is where I'm from.
Yeah.
But I have to have a big boy job.
Right.
Or a day job. I don't know if it's big boy, but,
a little from column A.
Yeah, exactly. But with Midnight Society Productions, I have a single coming out. It's just in, I can't say anything about it really, except for that.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear it.
Curtis Atchison is producing Midnight Society Productions. I am writing the book. I have Reading for Filth. I have a project that's on hold, which is a night called Queer Circus, which was a Boston night we did back in Boston. Mm-hmm. But that's on hold right now just because I've got a lot on my plate.
Right.
And as far as... I'll be in a... To be continued, like I'll be in a play down the road with the amazing Nora Burns. She's another legendary, you know, New York City performer.
Just dropping the names tonight. I love it.
Yeah.
I like, love it.
It's important that people know that these other people are also still out there doing
it is. It is. Because like I said, the art downtown, especially, never went, it didn't disappear entirely. It exists. It's in little pockets. There was a time where you went out on the Lower East Side or in the East Village or even Greenwich Village, you took a couple of steps. You walk within a 15 block radius. You could go see, you walk into any number of theaters. You could go see your one friend's band over here. And then you saw your other friend's one act play. And then you saw your other friend's cabaret. You could just make a night of it within 15 blocks. You could, or 10 or 5 blocks. You can do that. it's harder now. It doesn't mean that there isn't anything there.
Like, no, it doesn't. It's off of life support. It was on life support for a little while. It's breathing on its own now. But
it's there though, and I think it's important to say that. Yeah, it's off life support. It's breathing on its own.
For people
you
though,
gotta make a little bit more of an effort.
Some of the things that I hear from people who are like, "Oh, you went out in the '90s, you know, with the Sound Factory and those big mega clubs and this, that, and the other." If you want to have that experience, go out and support the places that are open, because if you don't go out, they're not going to throw you a party. You know, it doesn't come out of the ether.
Exactly.
So
exactly, that's an important point. It doesn't just like, you know, this it you have to put the money or the energy into it to give it back to you to it yeah, exactly.
And that's another thing, yo, club owners, open your wallets again, you know, cuz like it's budgets, you know, like
Don't be that cheap. I mean, we get it, but
we do a lot of stuff for free because it's in our blood. You know what I mean? Like, Reading for Filth is a passion project, but like, you know, there are other things that, and Reading for Filth is also carrying on the legacy of somebody who I thought was really important, which is Hattie Hathaway. And my collaborator, Wendy Stewart Kaplan, she's such a spitfire that like the two of us together, we just make a hell of an event, and it's just a lot of fun. But then, you know, there are the other things that we want to get up and running, and people, like, you say to a club owner like, "Oh, well, this is going to require X, Y, and Z," and they're done from that point forward. It's like, well, you know, you gotta understand, you know, if we're going to stay up until 4 o'clock in the morning and then go to work, we got to, like, you know, we got to pay the bills.
Yeah, you got to put a little something into it there. And I think people come to New York expecting like the fun, but like, the fun doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, in the '90s, there was so much money around. Everybody had money. I don't know where it came from. I don't know why we got paid so much.
Clearly there's some money around because things cost so much. People have the, you know, someone's buying some shit. But
there's nothing that's cheap. There's nowhere in New York to live that's cheap anymore. Yeah.
You know, the people who have the money might be a little less willing to, you know, put it certain places, I think.
Yeah. And that's where, like, don't hire the $40 drag queen that's going to come in and do a half-assed job. Hire the $500 drag queen that's going to come and blow your people's socks off.
You are going, frankly, you just led me to where I was going with this. You're going to get your money's worth if you're going to see the difference between the $40 queen and the $500 queen.
And you're going to see the difference in the following show when the crowd comes back.
Exactly. It's called your pay. And pay your artists, people. Pay the artists. Treat them well. People will come. You'll have the return customer. It's an investment. It's just, you know. And I think, and to the younger generation of people, of artists, performers, whether they're doing drag or they're using some other medium, you know your worth too.
Yeah.
Know your value. You don't have to do it for $40.
Yeah.
I know all that makeup costs more than $40.
Well, to be honest, some of those $40 queens and some of the queens I've seen in the Hell's Kitchen bars, they're worth less than $40.
So. Okay. Well, yeah, fair enough. Well, mate, let's upgrade.
Saturated. We're too saturated.
And you know what? I'd like to see like an anti-contour queen brigade. Like, okay, maybe we can try that.
I'll show you pictures after of what no contour looks like. It's amazing how
full
how, like,
cheeks.
Yeah. I think that the makeup that's out today, though, some of it blows my mind. Like Milk, there's a queen from RuPaul's Drag Race called Milk. If you look at his looks, I mean, they're just art, you know? Yeah. So like not everything has gone, like, I don't want to be that like prophet of doom that says, "Oh, everything's bad and drag is ruined." And I know I said drag was kind of ruined earlier, but not really. There's some brilliant stuff going on out there.
Sure.
It's just, you have to dig through a lot of crap to get it. It's like Netflix.
A few looks kind of caught attention and maybe went viral. And so that's what the mass populace sees and mimics.
Well, it's what Kim Kardashian and RuPaul were doing.
Exactly. And everyone wants, and next thing you know, you got a million people posting a picture of themselves with the same kind of look. And then that's like all you see. It's
what I wonder is if the passion for the, because the people that you that I've mentioned before, like the Lady Bunny and the, you know, those people, they have stayed in the game because that it's their passion, it's their work, it's what they love. I wonder in 10 years how many of the people who are doing it now, if it's just like something that they're having fun with or if it's something they're going to stay passionate about. I wonder where that's going to go. It's going to be interesting to see.
That is, but that is a very, very interesting point. Thank you so much, Eileen Dover, for being a part of Here and Now. I can't wait to read the book and to hear the single. I want to hear that. We're going to play that shit on this show.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And please keep me in touch and post it about what's happening with your performance and, of course, with the reading series, with the performance space. And thank you for doing that and continuing the Read for Filth series. I think it's really important to have spaces like that and platforms for artists. And you're just like, also, man, you're booking a hell of a show.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for being part of this again.
And you don't have to be a celebrity to be in our show. You can be anyone.
Yes,
we will book
that.
You.
Anybody. You can be, like when we first met, you were telling me about it. You're like, you're like telling me who's on it. You're like, no, this is for anybody who just wants to do, and it's not strictly for any type of performance style or medium. It's like anybody.
Got 15 minutes? Tell me your life story. You know?
And a whole 15 minutes of stage time. Like, unheard of, people. Come back next week, guys. The Carvels NYC will be my guest. Stay tuned for Frequency Theory with Tom Tenney. We're going to leave you a little something-something from next week's guests. Thank you so much, Eileen.
Thank you.